All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kabbalah and Coffee. This is our weekly exploration of all things mystical. It is wonderful to see you all this morning. It is gorgeous weather, and the mysticism is crackling. I don't even know what that means. Okay, so let us set this up. The Kabbalists discuss a very fundamental question. Please take a pass. The Kabbalists discuss a very fundamental question, and that is, why are we here? Right? It's a question that many have asked throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia. Why are we here? What is the purpose for our being? And not only individually, why am I here? Why do I exist? But collectively, why are we all here? Why does the world exist? Why does the universe exist? Many answers have been given by many different people. Some, by the way, I'm sure I don't need to tell you this for the first time, but some have posited that we are not actually here for any good reason. We are only here by some cosmic accident. Happened to be a bit or a cosmic joke, right? The comedy of existence, right? The world happens to exist because of all of these, you know, random actions, whatever it is, and that's why the world exists. Okay, on that level, then asking the question, why are we here, is pretty much a moot point, because these types of chemicals mixed with those chemicals and create a big bang, so there you go. Why are we here? Cosmic accident. So Kabbalah certainly does not prescribe to that notion. Rather, taking the Jewish formula that we exist intentionally, that there's intentional existence, it's not happenstance, it's not accidental, it's not, you know, even if you explain the how of creation in any number of ways, there's still the question of the why of creation. The why of creation is because God wants us here. The question is why. Why does God want us here? And that's a tricky question, because trying to figure out the motives of God is as difficult as trying to figure out the motives of God. Right? Like that would be the reference point to something that's difficult. Right? How do you figure out why God wants something? The language of the language of the mystics, Aifataiva, is kankasha. You can't ask a question on a desire. Why does God want the world? Why did He create a world? I mean, who knows? Yet, there is something that's stated many, many times throughout the mystical text. It stems from a midrashic statement, and that is, I'll say it first in the Hebrew, and then I'll translate it, Nis'ava Kadosh Baruch Hu liyis lo dira b'tachtonim, which means that God wanted to have a dwelling place and an abode in the lowest of realms. This becomes a very key idea in the question of why did God create the world? Why is there existence? And again, just to break this down, so the explanation here is that God wanted a home in the lowest realms. What does that mean? You take a place that is spiritually dark and disconnected, a place that's spiritually void, a place that's spiritually insensitive, and you make that space a home for God. That is what God wanted. In other words, God wants the transformation of a space that's dark to become a space that's light. By the way, in case you're wondering why it is that we call the world dark, isn't that derogatory? All we need to do is look at events like what happened a few days ago to understand that the world is still a very dark place. A world in which you can have such horrors as tragedy. Not even the fact that it was carried out. I'm referring, of course, to Florida, to Parkland. But the fact that it's even a possibility that such pain could exist in the world. In other words, God creates a world in which there's a possibility for this to be a reality. If God doesn't create the possibility for pain, suffering, loss, death, mayhem, terror, etc., then that can't exist, because nothing can exist unless God creates the space or the possibility for that to exist. So the fact that that can exist just shows us how existentially dark the world is. The world is with almost within its essence a somewhat dark place. Now, it's not an exclusively dark place, but it is also a dark place. And so our task, of course, is to bring light into this world, specifically to make the world at home or a home for God. And that means to make the world align with something higher than itself, align with higher purpose, align with beauty, with light, with goodness, with spirituality, with all of the positive things and not the negative things. Now, if God wanted such a beautiful world, why didn't He create it? If God wants a world of beauty and light and harmony and peace and love and not hate and terror and violence and mayhem and murder, if God didn't want that, so then why does that exist? And the answer is because God wanted us to take a broken world and fix it. Even though he could have created the fixed world right away. He wanted us to take a broken world and to fix it. Why? Number one, that gives us a job. Right? If it was already done, if it was already pre-made, then what are we doing? We're doing a challah bake today with the kids. Challah and babka bake with the kids. The kids of the Hebrew school. And the question is, how much should we prepare in advance for them? Right? How should we give them prepared dough and they just shape it? Or they just put the chocolate and make it into the babka? Should we give them, on the other extreme, totally raw ingredients that they have to measure out from the original containers? Like, here's a bag of flour. Make yourself that. Here's what you need to do. Just scoop out 4 cups. Let's go. Let's get this thing going. Flour everywhere. Or do we do some sort of hybrid and, you know, kind of prepare certain things, but certain things leave for them, whatever. So we've taken a hybrid approach. Why? If you give the child a ready-made product, then what are they doing? Right? We're doing a babka bake. Here's your babka. Wait, what am I doing? So if God creates a realm that's already fixed, that's already perfect, so what do? Enjoy it? There's already a realm for that. It's called heaven. And there are already beings that enjoy heaven, and those are called angels. That already exists. God created this world and put us here for a completely and radically different purpose. It's not to enjoy the perfection, but it's to create out of imperfection something a little bit nicer. To take a broken world and work on healing it just a little bit. Day by day, little by little, more and more and more. And that's our job. So the Alter Rebbe writes in Likutei Torah, in his book on the Torah portions, the Alter Rebbe writes that this is analogous to a parrot. A tzipor hamedaberes, a bird that speaks. A parrot. What other birds speak? What is it?
Minor bird?
Yeah. Never heard of that.
Minor bird?
Do they look like parrots?
No.
Could I just throw them into the parrot genre?
No, I don't think so.
What, do they say more than parrots? I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah, a minor bird.
Talking birds.
Okay. Straight up talking birds.
We gotta teach it, probably.
Well, yeah, but yeah. Even kids, huh?
Minor birds, they mimic.
They mimic.
Well, they all do.
The talking bird on YouTube. Oh, I know who. Big Bird.
See, the African parrot is the best. At, you know, at, they think that the African parrot could like possibly, go a little step beyond mimicking.
You know the story about the bird that knew so much, knew Yiddish, knew Hebrew. On the Lower East Side, a guy's walking down a store, a pet store, and he sees this bird. It's talking. It's kvetching in Yiddish. Like, unbelievable. Never. And the guy walks into the store and the owner, he says, "This is unbelievable." And the owner says, "You think this is great? You think this is amazing? This bird knows the whole high holiday service. The whole high. Could be a cantor. Yeah, the whole high holiday service." He's like, "You've got to be kidding me." He's like, "No, this is legit." He says, "Let me hear." He starts belting out, Kol Nidre, squawk, squawk, right? Doing the whole thing, the whole Kol Nidre. And this man says, "This is unbelievable. How much for the bird?" He says, $1,000. $1,000? Okay, it's a lot of money. I wasn't expecting to spend $1,000 on a bird today. But hey, I, for this, you know, it's amazing. Takes the bird home, and immediately they strike up this friendship. It's unbelievable. There they are at night singing duets. It's the man, the parrot. It's unbelievable. It's a beautiful thing. It's like slow down, like slow-mo. The man and the parrot, they're hanging out. They're chilling. They come to High Holidays, and this fellow brings his parrot in to shul because the parrot knows the service, but he's going to hold the parrot back from coming to services. And the doorman at the synagogue says, "Wait, you can't bring in a bird to services. It's not respectful." The man says, "This is not just a bird. This bird knows the service. This bird knows all the prayers. This bird could be a cantor." Forget just the congregant. This bird could lead the services. The bouncer says, the doorman says, I'm not buying this. He says, I'm telling you, you want to put money down on it? Yeah. Now, of course, it's the holidays, so they're not actually putting down money, but they're pledging money that perhaps, you know, whatever. And meanwhile, there's a whole commotion, and people start throwing in bets. It becomes this whole Vegas thing just breaking out. Eventually, there's a lot of money on the line, and the guy says, okay, I'll let your bird in if he can sing some of the prayers. And the man says, all right, it's a deal, let's do it. And the money is wagered. And he says, all right, bird, your time to sing. Let's make us some money. Bird is silent. Come on, bird. Nothing. Silence. And the man is devastated and embarrassed, he walks home. He says to the bird, how could you betray me? We're such close friends. After all of this, I know you know the prayers. I know you know the service. How could you betray me? And the bird says, can you imagine the odds we're going to get on Yom Kippur? That was Rosh Hashanah. Can you imagine the odds we're going to get in Yom Kippur?
It's Alex the talking parrot.
Alex.
The color is, and tell you the color in
English. Nice. Without being prompted? Yeah, he could recognize it?
Alex, what color is this? Or Alex, show me the blue cube.
Nice.
Say, this is the blue cube.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's on YouTube.
Huh. We don't need Alex anymore because we have Alexa. Hey, Alexa, what color is this blue cube? Blue. All right, so here we go. Let's bring it back. So the Alter Rebbe says like this, that a king will ask to have a talking bird brought in. Why? Because the king gets enjoyment of hearing and watching, you know, beholding a talking bird. Why? There are many people, many ministers and officers and whatever it is, many people, servants, that can talk to the king. So why does the king want a talking bird? Because a bird shouldn't talk. A bird, not shouldn't, I mean, a bird, you don't typically associate birds with speaking. So a talking bird is something unusual, and therefore it's something that causes the king enjoyment, that causes the king pleasure. So the same thing is true with this. Now, why does it cause the king pleasure? It's like any comedy. Comedy is when the unexpected is happening. So something that's unexpected transpires, so it causes some amusement. This is, again, according to Kabbalah, some of the angles behind God creating this world and tasking us with making it a home for Him. God wants us to take a world that doesn't at all look godly, that doesn't at all look spiritual, and make it into a spiritual place. Take a world of darkness and transform it into light. Take a bird that shouldn't talk and make it sing. Right? That's kind of what we're doing. Now, it's not just for God's amusement. There's a lot of deep purpose into it. But the point is that our job, our mission, is to create this transformation from one extreme to the other. So God creates. God sets up a broken, flawed reality, and our job is to heal it and to make it better. So how does the world get broken? How does the world become flawed? If God is perfect, if you will, if God is flawless, so how does God create a world that is flawed? Now, you could say that God could create anything, which is true. But how does it actually work? So Kabbalah explains that this happens, and this is something we've talked about many, many times, even as recent as last week. This happens through the process called Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum is the contraction of divine light. So there's divine light that's emanating everywhere, and that divine light would create a world which is perfect, like God. It would create a world, create a reality that's in God's image, that is as light, if you will, as God, where there's no darkness, where there's no flaws, where there's no pain, there's no suffering, right? All of these things don't exist. That's if the world is created solely through light. So what God does is God contracts the light, putting forth this element called Tzimtzum, this contraction of divine light, creating a space that can allow for darkness and limitation and flaws to emerge. So again, our limited, flawed, defined, dark world is a product of God's tzimtzum, God's contraction. And like we've said many times, God's contraction is not necessarily an absence of God, but it's God who's creating the absence, so it's an active darkness, if you will, but it's all God. And yet, it's God contracting himself, so to speak, to create a world that is not in the same perfect light image, infinitely light image, as himself. So last week we used the example of the five articles, the five organs of verbal articulation. The five ways in which we make sound. And we said in Hebrew these are the Mem, the Nun, the Tzadik, the Pei, and the Chaf. So these letters are emanating from different parts of the mouth and throat. Mem is with the lips. Chaf is with the cha, right? It's with the throat. So you have different letters are produced by different ways we form the mouth or formulate the letters, right? Are formed by different parts of the mouth. But all of them are the same idea in that they obstruct the sound and kind of block the pure sound from coming out. Like the pure sound would either sound like breath, which is the letter hey, or like an aleph, which is ah. Like something unfettered at all would be either that breath or the vocal sound, but not at all fettered. Every time you have a letter that's distinct, so what's happening is the voice, the sound, is coming out through a block. It's being blocked, and then it's going around, or it's going through, it's going over that block, and it's producing a unique sound, which then can formulate letters and words and ideas and concepts that can stretch on theoretically to an infinite place. You can create, I would imagine, an infinite number of letter, word, paragraph, story combinations with the various articulations of the mouth. So even if you have only five different distinctions of the way sound can come out, from those five, you can create any number of different letters and then combine them in any number of different ways and then produce any number of different ideas and communication. So think about how many different books have been written. How many things have been uttered throughout human history? And why did I mention books? I probably shouldn't mention books, so we're talking about speaking now. But if you had an audiobook of all those books, right, you would have a lot of different ideas, and they're all being articulated through the same voice, the same breath, and the same articulations of the mouth that are being divided into five different categories, if you will. But again, the important thing to note is that all verbal articulation happens because the sound is being blocked. If the sound weren't blocked at all, it would not make any unique letter sounds, and therefore it could not be combined into words, paragraphs, sentences, paragraphs, story, chapter, stories, etc. Make sense? So there are five gevurot, five limitations, five severities, five limitations that limit the pure light, the pure sound, whatever that purity is, from coming out. Mem nun tzadik pei chaf in verbal articulation. There's also another way to understand this, and that is with the hand. We have five fingers, five gevurot. So instead of the hand being just a solid hand, the hand has five distinct fingers. And that allows us to have manipulation. We're able to do things with the hand, with the fingers, because they're divided into five. But five is a very significant number. Kabbalistically, it says there are five gevurot, five powers of limitation. Limitation meaning five powers of distinction, limitation, blocking, and tzimtzum. So when it comes to the world, bringing it back from the analogy to the analog, when it comes to the creation of the universe, so what's happening is that before you can have a finite reality, finite existence, with all of its limitations, and all of the darkness, and all of the distance, and all of the pain, and all of the hardship, and even in addition to that, the fact that you can have a world that has so much diversity emanating from one God, that is a product of these five levels of gvura, these five tzimtzumim, these five contractions, if you will, that are dividing the pure one light into all of these separate items. Make sense? But like verbal articulation, this is the big idea. Like verbal articulation, that is the product of the sound being obstructed, but then being expressed. Because if you make the mem sound, or the m sound, same thing in, you know, the letter m or the letter mem in Hebrew, right? So it's, let's say, Mendel, right? The word Mendel. The meh sound, me, so it's using the lips to make the letter M. But it's not just closing the lips, because closing the lips makes this sound. No sound. So if you just have the tzimtzum, if you just have the gvura, if you just have the limitation, what sound does it make? No sound. Close, lips closed make no sound. They don't make a meh sound, they make no sound. When does it make a mem sound? Meh, me, Mendel. It's only when I close the lips and then force the sound through those closed lips to allow for that burst of sound to come through those closed lips. It's the sound that comes from closed lips to open lips that makes the meh sound. In other words, it takes the gvura, the tzimtzum, the constriction, the limitation, but it also takes the light coming out, the sound coming out, to produce the sound. So, this is the key idea. Creation, for an infinite, unlimited, pure, kind God, to create a world that is dark and limited and finite and diverse, for that to happen, requires tzimtzum. Requires constriction and blockage. But it requires more than that as well. After it's blocked, you still need that infusion of light to create that reality. You can't just have the block, because if you just have the block, nothing is created. If you just have gvura, if you just have the withholding, if you just have the contraction, and you don't have a subsequent expansion, then you don't have a limited world. You have nothing. You have just absence. So to have a world, to have sound, you need the contraction, but then you also need the revelation that follows. Does it make sense? Yes? So you need to block it, but then you also need to reveal it. Let's talk about this from a God, from a divine consciousness level. And let's reframe the conversation away from evil and darkness to disconnection or connection to God. A world that's created, bathed in pure divine light, would automatically and consciously recognize its creator. Right? If the world was created in a way that it was completely bathed in divine light, that the world was suffused, was saturated, was inundated, was just totally subsumed within this divine radiance that was shining. Nothing could deny God. Everything would be aware of God. Every creature would be, I mean, it wouldn't look like a creature distinct from God, but either way, it would be speak God, it would know God, it would be obsessed about God. The only thing it would know is God, if it was created in such a way where it was bathed in this divine light. But again, there would be no purpose to find God in a world in which God was ever present. If the only reality around is God, then what's the accomplishment? What are you doing finding God? It's not what are you doing, but what have you achieved? What type of achievement is there in finding God in a world in which God is not hidden? And again, if you want a realm in which God is ever present, God's light is ever shining, and the creations just bask in divine light and don't need to find God, there's no game of hide and seek, you already have that. It's called heaven, it's called the angels. They bathe in divine light, they bask in divine radiance. The souls also, before and after, are also bathed before and after this journey of life down here, the souls also are bathing that divine energy and divine light. And so it's a beautiful thing, but again, there's no achievement there. What are you achieving? There's nothing to achieve. It's already set out for you. So God wanted to create one space, one small limited space where you can't immediately see God, where you don't immediately see God, where God's light is not shining and radiant and bathing the whole world. Where no, God's light is actually hidden. And if you want to find God's light, sometimes you have to pull a book off the shelf and open it up and study something that opens your mind to see how God's light is in things that you might not recognize God's light in. You have to study Kabbalah sometimes to recognize that God's light is inside stuff right around you, everywhere. But you don't see it. God wanted a world, God created a world in which you don't see His light immediately, which is bathed not in light, but oftentimes in darkness. And God wants us to find Him. The Baal Shem Tov said that God in this creation, God creating the world, is a big game of hide and seek. God hides, and our job is to seek Him. So when kids play hide and seek, it's a very spiritual game. And the message is, even if you don't see the other person, don't stop looking for them. Because they're there, they're somewhere. You just have to find them. And it's a beautiful lesson. Because somebody might say, well, I don't see God, so then I don't think God is here. The message is, so you never played hide and seek before. God's hiding. New. Don't give up. Remember what it felt like when you were hiding and everyone gave up and no one was looking for you? How disappointing it was? Right? Keep on looking, you'll find God. See, here's how it works. God creates through tzimtzum, through contraction. And what that does is, that creates beings that define themselves as existent, as I. Let's understand this for a second. God creates through the gvurot, through the constriction, through tzimtzum. God creates through contraction to create beings that sense themselves as existent. In other words, they don't sense God, they sense themselves. And it's a little bit of a zero-sum game here, and I'll explain what I mean. The more you feel yourself, the less you feel God. The more you feel God, the less you feel yourself. That's the way it works. If you feel that God is in control, I'll give you one example. If you feel that God is in control of everything, then you are necessarily less in control, which, by the way, is a good thing. Right? If God is more in control, then I am less in control. If I am more in control, then God is less in control. You can't really have both of us in control. It doesn't really work. It's like, well, I believe that God runs everything, but I'm also going to run some things today. That's not consistent with that message. Like, if God's in control, then I don't need to be in control. Which, again, is a very good thing. Because I know when I'm in control, when we're in control, things don't always end up the way they should be. Right? So the more divine light bathes the universe, not only does creation recognize God, creation does not feel itself as existing so much. I don't exist so much. God exists. I'm not so real. God is real if I see God. But in the world that we live in, which is a world that's bathed not in divine light, but in divine darkness, not that God is not here, but God is hiding. That's the way God created it. It's by design, right? It's not a flaw, it's a feature, right? By this method of creation where God is hiding, if you will, so I don't see God, I feel myself. I exist. I don't know about God, but I know that I exist. I exist, and I am real. I don't know about God. I don't know how real God is, but I know that I'm real. The purpose, though, is that a person who thinks that they exist, a person who, if you ask them, they will tell you, I don't just think I exist, I know I exist. I exist. That person should come to embrace a little bit more of the divine truth. That's the talking bird. That a person who self-identifies, who identifies as self, that a person with their own identity, with their own ego, with their own mind, with their own heart, with their own identity, with their own being, with their own reality, that person should come and embrace a higher truth, that is the talking bird. That is Alex, the talking bird. That's an amazing thing. For an angel to recognize God, no big deal. For a person to deny God, also no big deal. It's par for the course. You live in a dark world, a world where you don't see God, to say, I don't think that there's a God, again, that's easy. For a bird, for a human being to speak, easy. Relatively easy, right? For a bird to not speak, also easy. For a bird to speak, now that's something. For an angel to see God, to recognize God, no big deal. For a person to deny God, no big deal. For a person to identify with self, to know, to feel, to believe that they exist, to also create space and room for divine consciousness, for divine awareness, to be aware that there's a creator and a purpose, etc. That's something magical. So how does that happen? You need opposites. If God wants a home in the lowest of realms, you need a lowest of realms, and then you need some light. If God wants the human being who identifies with self to be more aware of God, then you need ego, you need self-identification for people, and then you need a little bit of light to allow people to discover God. In other words, even when you're playing hide and seek, sometimes you need some clues about where the other person is hiding. Sometimes you need to know at least that they're there, which is why the world is not only created through divine contraction, limitation, tzimtzum. There's also subsequently light that does come into the world. And that light allows for us to have an awareness of God even in our distinct mind and distinct reality. We can still find God because of that light that subsequently is suffused. Does this make sense? You need self, because if you didn't have self, then there's no point. In other words, God needed to create beings that identify themselves as I exist, and then to leak a little bit of light so that those beings that self-identify should also recognize the truth of the Creator. So that's the process. You need darkness, and then you need a little bit of light to come in. A lot of the light is what we're discovering, but you still need a little bit of that to get the process started. So Kabbalah says, not only are there hegavurot, five severities, five limitations, five levels of tzimtzum and gevurot, mem nun tzadeh pechaf, or the five fingers that kind of divide the hand, five limitations, five contractions. There are also five chasadim, five dimensions of chesed. Chesed is kindness and giving. So there are five constrictions, and then there are five givings, five openings of the channel. The way it works is that first you have the contraction, and then you have the expansion. First you have the closed lips, and then you can form, you can articulate the letter mem. First you close it, and then out comes the sound through and after the tzimtzum, the contraction. You have the expression, and the product of which is a letter that we call a distinct letter. So again, the objective here that God wants is to create beings that see themselves as independent, and those independent beings should discover the truth and find God. So first you need independence, which is a product of God hiding. But then you need them to find God, and that's a product of God revealing himself. So you need both. But the first thing that happens is the contraction, and then you need the expansion. First darkness and then light. Now, interestingly enough, in the process of creation, when the Torah describes what happens each day of creation, day one, day two, day three, it says, at the end of each day, Vayehi Erev, Vayehi Boker, Yom Echad. Vayehi Erev, Vayehi Boker, Yom Sheni. And it was evening, and it was morning, day one. It was evening, and it was morning, day two. Evening, and then morning. And like we've said many times, this explains the very interesting reality that the Jewish day starts at night. The Jewish day starts at night, and not just at midnight, but at sundown. Shabbat starts not Saturday, Friday night, Friday evening. Passover, the Seder, doesn't begin Passover morning or midnight. It happens 7 o'clock in the evening. 7 o'clock on a Monday, Passover, first day Passover is Tuesday. Why are we having a Seder Monday night? Well, because this is Jewish time. It's a little bit weird, right? Right. Judaism is always a little bit different, right? It's not mainstream. That would be so boring. But there's depth to it. It's because in the Torah's narrative of creation, you have first evening and then morning. First dark and then light. You would think that a day would be light and then dark, right? A unit would be, you know, start off in the morning and you end at night, and that can be your day. No, in the Jewish understanding, in the biblical understanding, it begins in the evening and it ends, first there's darkness and then there's light. The question is why? And the answer is, as we've just explained up until now, that it's not just telling us the process of, it's not just describing day one, day two, day three, it's telling us the process of creation itself. Creation happens first with contraction, and then expansion. The first thing that happens is darkness, and then there's light. The first thing is Tzimtzum, Gevura, and then you have the expansion and the light, the infusion of light to allow for that consciousness to settle in. So for a human being, the first thing that happens is the contraction, which means that the human being should consider him or herself independent. That's the Erev, that's the evening. And then you have the morning, the light, that is the recognition of, aha, wait a second, there's something higher, there's something greater than myself, there's a source that I come from. First, darkness, and then light. So let's jump in. Everyone has a copy? No? Let's jump in to page 48, at the top. We're about to get to some incredible concepts. You need one more? Sure. Peter, we got you covered. 48 at the top. And it begins with the word but. Nonetheless, we should be able to jump right in over here. But had the world been created solely via the restraining forces of the Gevurot, if the world is only created through darkness, constriction, limitation, the world could only perceive itself as an entirely independent entity. It would only have the feature of self-identity. It would only have the feature of recognizing self. It would not at all recognize God. It would be a bird that doesn't speak. It would be a lowly realm, a lowly world that's not a home for God. A divine revelation stemming from supernal kindness is therefore necessary to sweeten or temper the Gevurot and instill within creation awareness and sense of submission, bittul. In other words, you need a subsequent ray of light coming in, piercing through the dark clouds, if you will, to allow the individual to discover God and say, wait a second. I thought that it was only me, it was only us. I thought that we created ourselves. I thought that there's no higher purpose. There's no meaning. Wait a second. I'm seeing something. There's something higher than myself. This is the light that follows the darkness. This is the morning that follows the evening. that allows for this paradox to exist or to succeed. The paradox being a lowly world discovering God. A bird speaking, right? God wants a home in the lowest of realms. Wait a second, that means two things. There needs to be a lowly realm, disconnected from God, that becomes a home for God. So you need both elements. You need the darkness, and then you need the light. So let's keep on going. This explains the verse. Hey, guys. This... Let's close the door after. Todah Rabbah. So second paragraph from 48. So he says, this explains the verse that I cited a moment ago, and there was evening and there was morning one day. Creation began with the evening. And this is not, what he's saying is, let's understand this metaphorically. Creation begins with the evening. At first there was darkness, denoting the contraction of the divine energy to allow for creation. And thereafter there was light, the morning, symbolizing the subsequent revelation of Chesed. This procedure engendered a sense of bittul. In other words, what is bittul? Bittul is when you have something that identifies as self, when that being says, I acknowledge something greater than myself. If something never felt self, and it acknowledges something higher than self, again, what happened? An angel acknowledging God is not an accomplishment. It's a natural state of reality. But when something that previously identified as self, I exist, when that previously self-identifying being submits to something greater than self, that's something that is being accomplished. Now let's continue. This is also the concept of tzedek and tzedakah. So listen to this. What is the word tzedek? Tzedek, we talked about last week a little bit. Tzedek can be translated as righteousness. But I want to reference a verse from, I believe, Deuteronomy that says, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Which is translated as justice, justice, shall you pursue. You shall pursue. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Now, it might also be a slogan somewhere. Maybe? Is this like a legal slogan that I'm not aware of? Perhaps. Justice, justice, you shall pursue. Using the word tzedek twice. So listen to this. Tzedek in this context, which means justice, justice connotes severity, strictness, restriction. Justice connotes gevura, in a sense. Yes? With me on this? Tzedek is a reference to the tzimtzum. Tzedek is a reference to the limitation that creates a world that self-identifies. What is tzedakah? Tzedakah is an act of chesed, an act of kindness. Tzedakah is a charitable act. Tzedakah is giving. So tzedek is justice. It's withholding. It's withholding divine light to create a world that identifies as self-existing, right? Creating a world that is dark, that does not see its creator. Tzedakah, with the extra hey, is divine kindness of giving light, of granting light, to grant to creations an awareness of something greater than themselves, which creates this talking bird, so to speak, a world that recognizes God as its source. Make sense? Tzedek and tzedakah. We're about to get into some sefirot discussion, so let's pass this around. Please take and pass. This is my trusty old sefirot chart. We've used this chart for years, and it still works. What do you say? We've done this before, but not for a while. Not for like a few years, yeah. So here we go. By the way, it's color-coded. Look how cool this is. Super color, huh? You see that? Front and back. On the back is, on one side is the Hebrew, the other side is the English. Okay, so here we go. The blue are the intellectual divine powers. The red are the emotional. right? Blue is kind of like water, which is cold. Red is fire, which is hot. The intellectual is kind of calmer. It's colder. It's more. It's calm. Whereas the red is fiery. It's passionate. It's emotive, and that's the seven lower powers. So the three higher powers, Chachma, Bina, Dat. It goes right, left, center, and the emotional powers, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut. Okay, so here we go. Yes.
These are the ten spheres.
Yes.
And can you just briefly define spheres?
Yeah, these are divine emanations. God, of course, is pure and not limited to these ten attributes. Nonetheless, these ten attributes are ways in which God manifests himself to create the world. So it says that these are the ten building blocks. Kind of looks like DNA, maybe it doesn't, but these are the building blocks, so to speak, of creation, and these are 10 powers that we have in our soul being created in the divine image. Just like God possesses these 10 attributes, we also possess these very same 10 attributes. Now, the lowest, here's really why I want to show this to you, because it's easier to see it on this chart. The lowest of the attributes is Malchut, which is translated here as leadership, but it's Malchut that serves as the point of contact between that which stands at the top to that which emanates below, to that which emerges beneath it. So, if this is on the creator side of things, if this is what stands above creation, and creation stands below it, so the point, the nexus of contact, that point of contact between creator and creation actually happens through Malchut. Malchut is that channel that connects, that bridges the higher and the lower. So, where does our... How does God create a world that identifies as self? That says, oh, I exist. I don't know about my creator. I know that I exist. The world has its own identity, right? How does that happen? That happens through Malchut, the lowest of the energies. So Malchut is where the Hei Gevurot, the five levels of Tzimtzum, are housed. It's Malchut, it's in Malchut that you have these five contractions, these five dimensions of restriction that then produce a world that doesn't see God, but rather sees itself. So let's continue inside, bottom of page 48. Tzedek symbolizes, last paragraph on 48, Tzedek, which is justice, symbolizes Malchut as it is a recipient from Gevurot, from the five limitations or restrictions or contractions or severity, whatever. So Malchut, Tzedek is Malchut in that limitation mode. The initial building of Malchut is through the Gevurot. How do you build Malchut? Malchut as create as that which is at the point of spawning creation that self-identifies. How do you get that? How do you build Malchut? What is Malchut built of? I know we built this city of rock and roll, but what do we build Malchut of? We built Malchut of Gevurah. That's how you create. That's how Malchut produces a world that doesn't see God, that self-identifies. A world in which is not swimming with angels and souls. A world that's swimming with all the other stuff that we see around here. And the not good stuff. How? Because Malchut is built with Gevurah. Gevurah is contraction. In other words, it's not revealing God's light, it's hiding God's light. The verse first states, let's continue, page 50. His left hand is under his head, and subsequently the right hand embraces. First you have the left hand, and then you have the right hand. Left hand is always Gevurah, withholding. The right hand is always Chesed, giving. That's why in the chart, you see that Chesed, the first of the emotional attributes, is on the right side. Gevurah is on the left side. And indeed, this picture can almost be understood as a torso. It's the human torso. This is the head. The head's on top. You have the right arm, the left arm, right? You have the legs, and etc. So you have different parts of the body that are depicted in this scheme of spherot, the way it's depicted on the handout that I gave out before. The point is that in the verse that talks about left hand and right hand, it says first left hand and then right hand. Why first left and right? Go right then left. No? Because first, yeah.
But it wasn't just the left. It was that it's under his head. It's hidden.
Yeah, it's under his... Yeah. Yeah. There's also symbolism in the fact that it's under the head, exactly. Yeah. Under his head. Yeah. There's a lot of layers to that. We don't have time to go into all the layers of under his head. But the it says sometimes the gvura, you can reach a higher level through gvura. That's why it's connected with head. But the left hand is the restricting hand, the restricting modality, closing off, not revealing, withholding, that's the left. And then you have the right hand which embraces, which refers, page 50, referring, second line, referring to the revelation of the chasadim, of the kindnesses, at which point malchut is termed tzedakah with an additional hey, representing the five supernal kindnesses. So here we go. Malchut begins, the first building of malchut. Malchut is first created from the hey gvurot, from the five limitations, the five constrictions. And then, subsequently, chesed, five kindnesses, are revealed within malchut. Malchut is first tzedek, justice. You know what they say justice is? Fill in the blanks, crossword puzzle. Justice is? Justice is? Blind. What does it mean, justice is blind? It's not compassionate. We're not being empathy. There's no empathy here. Justice is blind. Tell me the facts, and I'll tell you who's right and who's wrong. No emotion here. Justice is blind. That can be tzedek. And that's gvura, and that's malchut. And what is... But that's not enough, because then you have a world that's only dark and can't at all find God. And then you have a lower world that's not a home for God at all. So what you need, therefore, is a combination. First, you have the gvurot, the limitations, the restrictions, and then you have the chesed. First, limitation, and then revelation. First, hiding, and then a little bit of revelation, and then a little bit of revealing. First, gvura, and then chesed. First, left, then right. First, tzedek, justice, blind justice, and then tzedakah, kindness. That's the hey. This fusion, let's continue 50, this fusion, second paragraph, is alluded to in the verse, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem. It says, after Abraham went to war. And we have to end a little bit early today because we have this function for the children, so we're going to end in a few minutes. We'll just do a little bit more. It says after Abraham fought in the war between the five kings and the four kings to rescue his nephew Lot, the book of Genesis talks about a regional war that went down between five countries and four countries, and the four countries, the four kings, were actually winning against the five kings, and then they captured Abraham's nephew, so Abraham got involved in the battle, in the war, and then Abraham and his little army, he had a little army, they helped turn the tide of the war, and they won the war for the five kings. That's what it says in the Bible. After the war, it says that Abraham was thanked by the five kings, and then out to him came Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, this mysterious character that we don't find anywhere else in the Bible. Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, comes out to greet him and to thank him. And then it says that Abraham gave him a tithe of all of the spoils of war that he took. Abraham gave Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, the tithe, the 10% of all that he collected in war. Who's this guy? And why is Abraham giving to him? What's this mystery going on? So the commentators explain that he was shame. Shame. Not the English word shame, but the Hebrew name shame, which also means name, by the way, which is very confusing. But his name was shame. Who was shame? Shame was the son of Noah. Noah, of Noah and the Arks. Noah had three sons. Shame, Cham, and Yafet. I don't know what's shame in the English. I don't even know what shame is. Shame? Cham is... Same, how do we say it in the English? I know Yafet is Japheth or something. But I don't know how Cham... What's Cham? There's no Cham in English. Ham, probably Ham.
Yeah, all I've ever seen is Shem, Ham.
Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Japheth, whatever. Yeah. So Shem, Ham, and Japheth in the Hebrew. The first Shem was the son of Noah, who was the most righteous of the three sons. Survivor of the flood. He lived for many years, hundreds of years. He lived in the times of Abraham also. Who was Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem? Our sages say it was really Shem, who was a tzaddik. He had his own yeshiva, by the way. There was a yeshiva of Shem and Aver. Shem was a Torah scholar, if you will, before Torah was Torah, exactly the way we have it. Nonetheless, he was a scholar. He was a righteous person. And this is why, so he comes out to thank Abraham for winning the war. And Abraham gives him the tithe because he was a very special guy. He was a tzaddik. So he gave him the tithe. That's all the story in the Bible. In this discourse, we imagine this whole story in a spiritual way. Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, is a spiritual reality. It's a dimension. What is it? He explains. Malki Tzedek. Tzedek, we said. Tzedek is the Gvura, not Tzedakah. Tzedakah is giving kindness, right? Tzedakah is charity, giving. Tzedek, we said, is justice. It's withholding. Malki Tzedek. Malki means king. King Tzedek. Malki, Melech, Malki. Malki Tzedek. The king Tzedek, we said Tzedek, is the foundation of Malchut, which spawns creation. So first you have the Tzimtzum, the Tzedek. Malki Tzedek, and then it says Melech was the king. Shalem. Shalem means complete. Shalem means peace, but it also means complete and whole. So what does this mean? This fusion is also alluded to in the verse, Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, implying the completeness of Malchut, for it consists of both Chesed and Gvura, with Chesed's revelation sweetening the severity of Gvura. So Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, Malki Tzedek, the king Tzedek was the king of Shalem. What does that mean? First you have Tzedek, which is the harshness, and then you have Shalem. Shalem means complete. When is Malchut complete? When it not only has the restrictions of Gvura, but also the openness of Chesed. When not only do the lips close for the Mem, or the B, but they also open up. That's when it's complete. When you don't only have the restriction, but you also have the revelation. The Gvura and then the Chesed, that's how you have a world that self-identifies, but has a shot at finding God as well. So first you have the Tzedek, then the Tzedakah. First Malki Tzedek, and then Melech Shalem. First Tzedek, and then it can be complete when you have this infusion of light. First evening, and then there needs to be morning. Let's continue. In the same vein, the verse states, Tzadka Mimeni. She is right, it is from me. Which is another story. This story is the story of Judah and Tamar. One of the most perplexing stories of the... There are many perplexing stories of the Bible, but this is one of them. Where Judah believes that she is a harlot, and he propositions her, this Tamar, who was his daughter-in-law, and very very confusing story, very complicated story, or very unusual story. And he's with her, and she gets pregnant, and she has a child. Now, this is after, you have to understand, after this woman, Tamar, was married to one son of his, and the son died, a second son, and the second son died. So she was his daughter-in-law, but she wasn't currently married to any of the sons. We're wrapping up. Give me 2 minutes, we're wrapping up. So at this point, she's not actually married to one of his sons, but she had been married to two of his sons. He doesn't recognize her, because her face is covered. He's with her. She gets pregnant. He finds out that she's pregnant, and he finds out that his daughter-in-law is pregnant, and he had a third son that was earmarked to marry her when he got a little bit older. Third time's a charm, right? So you know, maybe it'll work out this time. So he says, she's pregnant. Why wasn't she waiting for my son? Now, he didn't know it was from him. So he said, that's it. Punish her, whatever it is. She sends him a message, kind of hinting to him that it was his, that the child is his, that she was the mystery woman that he was with some months prior. And he says, Tzadka Mimeni. She's right. Mimeni, the child is from me. She's right. She's right. Mimeni, the child is from me. It's my child. She's fine. She gave birth to twins, one of which is the great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of King David, of the Davidic dynasty, and Mashiach as well. Legit. We'll talk about this more a little bit next week or a little bit next time to kind of build on this story. But this is what's going on. So this is the practical story. Tzadka mimeni, she's right, it is from me. But the Kabbalistic interpretation is that the transformation of tzedek to tzedaka is mimeni, from me, so to speak, referring to the source of chesed. Tzadka is like tzedaka with a hay. Tzadka, how do you get the hay? From gevura. How do you get the hay? The infusion of kindness into gvura, mimeni, from me, from the realm of supernal chesed, of supernal kindness. All of this means to tell us that the world, although it's very limited and very dark and very distant, if you will, from God's pure, bright beauty, although it's dark and limited, the world also has, God also infuses a little bit of light into it. Otherwise, we would have no chance to discover God whatsoever. So there needs to be the darkness, but there's also a little bit of light coming in as well. What we're going to pick up next time is something amazing. That is, by default, God infuses light into the darkness to keep us going, to give us a chance to find Him. But every time we give tzedakah, God also gives more tzedakah. You with me? Every time we give below and are kind below, God is also kind above and infuses more and more light into our dark space. In other words, if we want more light in our world, if we look around at our world, especially with the events that have been going on lately, if we look around and say the world is a dark place, we need more light, there's something we can do. And that is tzedakah, acts of kindness. It doesn't only mean giving money. Means act of kindness and generosity. The more the kinder we are, that stirs supernally that the infusion of chesed to mix in with the gevura and make the world a brighter place. Thank you very much for joining me today. Sorry we had to cut it short.
Like a donor match.
Like a donor match. Oh, perfect. We give, God gives. Now God will give anyway, but the light that follows the gevura is limited. It's a limited light. The more we give, the more expansive our tzedakah is, the more expansive the divine tzedakah is, and the brighter the world is, and we all need a brighter world. May we experience this brighter world. May we not have days like we had last week, and may there only be love and peace and life on earth. Thank you very much for joining me for Kabbalah and Coffee.